sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. Nice shot.
Why, thank you, John. We like to make sure that the HMS Beagle with Mr. Charles goes down to the bottom. I am Stan Hudson.
And I'm John Kurlinski. Welcome you to another fun-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle,
where we take lighthearted looks at the serious issues of evolution and creation, because that's the best way. Lighthearted.
Yeah, and right.
Actually, and Stan, it was kind of lighthearted today. We're sort of following up on a last time on Sink the Beagle. We looked, I believe it was last time, we looked at the different flood stories from around the world that other ancient cultures had and noted some of the similarities and dissimilarities with the Bible.
Well, yeah, the cultures of the world remarkably have a fairly consistent ancient memory of some kind of flood that destroyed the world and from some little group of people that were somehow saved through that they repopulated the world, and there was a lot of similarities that we saw, like you say, from the biblical story. Maybe it's an indication that there was, in fact, something
an
that happened.
An ancient memory.
Yeah.
Well, there's also, Stan, just as we looked at flood memories, there's also ancient creation stories. And actually, some of the more familiar ones that people look at are, you know, deal with Marduk and Tiamat from Babylon, but actually from the Enuma Elish and others. But I want to look at a few that aren't quite so familiar.
Okay.
Just maybe two or three from some ancient cultures that we often don't associate with creation stories, like India and China and possibly the Norse stories of creation. And
well, let's take a look at the Indian story.
And when we look at these stories, Stan, we discover that there might be some ancient memories or some relationships to the biblical story, but also many diversions from the biblical story.
Yes, their significance in the things that they agree with and the things that they disagree with.
Yes, and I'd like to begin with the Indian story.
Okay.
It's a story that's found from the Upanishads, written in India about 700 or in the 600s BC, so they are quite late. They're actually at least 300 or more years after the biblical story in just written type of translations. And they usually begin with the idea of Brahman or sort of a Prajapati, the Lord of Creation. Either one of them, they kind of are intermingled, kind of confused. And there's a little bit of irony in, or I should say conflict in these stories, a little bit of oxymoronic type of structures where this really couldn't be this way. But the whole thing sort of begins like this. In the beginning, absolutely nothing.
Aha, the Big Bang.
And what existed was... But here's what's interesting. What did exist... wait a minute, there was nothing, but yet what did exist was covered by death and hunger.
Death and hunger.
So he, being Brahman or Prajapati, thought, let me have a self. And he created the mind.
Okay.
And as he moved about in worship, probably of himself, water was generated. No, that's strange. And it frothed and foamed on the water as he kind of worshipped about himself. And the froth eventually became solid earth. He rested on the earth.
Oh.
And then while this Brahman sort of is resting after he created himself, after he thought about all that, he began to become luminescent and fire came forth. He divided himself into three parts, fire, sun, and air. Thus, in the beginning, the world was only himself, being one essence. He eventually took the shape of a person.
Okay.
At first, he was afraid, it says, realizing that he was alone and had nothing to which to be afraid, though his fears ceased. But he wasn't happy, Stan. He just wasn't happy being alone, and he longed for another. So he grew large as two persons embracing and caused himself to split into two parts, kind of like two peas, two halves of a pea.
All right.
So you have this idea here, and then thus from then what happened after that, from them arose husband and wife, from these two parts of himself.
The two shall be one. No, the one shall be two.
The one shall be two.
Okay.
But the two then shall become one because they mated.
Okay.
And from their union arose human beings on the earth.
Adam and Eve.
And so it's kind of interesting. So stopping here and pausing on the Indian creation story, you sort of find a few parallels, obviously many differences, but the idea of aloneness, human aloneness has always plagued humanity. Why do I exist or whatever? And this loneliness has to be solved. And so, you know, we read in Genesis, it's not good that man be alone.
Yes.
And here we find the self-realization that he probably obviously agreed.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was an earlier reference, before you get on to the rest of the story, there's an earlier reference I just noticed about how there seemed to be this emphasis on water being early in the creation story. Lots of water. And that also kind of has reminiscence, you know, the spirit hovering over the waters.
Water before earth.
Before earth and everything else. That's interesting. But okay. But yes, the purpose seems to include how can we take
sex.
Care of this alonement? Well, go ahead. You have a little bit more on that, don't you?
Notice what happens then. When you continue on in the ancient Indian story, the female part of this new union, having mated with someone who she was once part of, resolved that that shouldn't happen again. And so she changed herself into a cow to disguise herself. However, he, being clever, changed himself into a bull and mated with her again.
And from that came cattle.
So she changed herself again, not wanting to mate with someone from herself. And she became a mare, probably because mares are faster than cows and could run faster. But he changed himself into a stallion and mated her again.
And there came horses.
And then she did the donkey, likewise the donkeys. Then she became a ewe. And he became a ram. And all the way down from humans to horses to ants.
Even ants.
So all of this life form came about as this woman kept trying to be hiding and fleeing from man, and man becoming the opposite of her and mating her again.
Well, it's plain hard to get some of us. Yeah, that's some reality there. But, you know, it is, maybe she was being coy and trying, you know, to work it to where all this creation took place. I don't know. It's interesting.
It's interesting. But the whole point
certainly
is
sexual union is a very big part of this creation story.
Yeah, and when you realize it, though, it's a part of an emptiness, yet there's a God there, yet he's not there, yet he decides to become a self, an aware being, and it's just a lot of, you know, a lot of confusion and
there's
stuff.
There's no great purpose, there's no plan. I will now make this, and everything sort of comes out of accident, sort of a big bang with faces.
Or creaturely features.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of, and it really doesn't talk about destiny or ultimate purposes in these things.
Just listening to our tone, John, I want to throw in a little bit of a caution, because there are possibly people listening to this who do believe the Hindu approach to creation, and we're not here to make fun of people or their religion. However, we are trying to compare these ancient stories to show that there seems to be elements that relate and can connect well to the biblical account.
If, you know, the only thing we don't want to do is encourage kind of New Age thought, where people start saying, well, therefore they all are true, and let's just embrace them all.
Yeah, whatever
and,
works
know, blah,
for
blah, blah,
you.
Blah, blah, blah. No, we find a lot of
we're
error
looking
in
for
these
truth.
Things.
Yes. We're looking for truth. Let's go to the Chinese story. Do we have time for the Chinese story?
Oh, sure, we have time for a Chinese story. They're fun, too.
Well, this comes from the Classic of Mountains and Seas, which is an anthology of stories collected in the 1st century B.C., but they're probably go back quite a bit older than that.
Yeah.
And long, long ago, and this is where the story begins, when heaven and earth were still one, the entire universe was contained in an egg-shaped cloud. All the matter of the universe swirled chaotically in that egg, and deep within the swirling matter was Panju, a huge giant who grew in the chaos. For 18,000 years he developed and slept in the egg. Finally, one day he woke and stretched, and the egg broke to release the matter of the universe. Doesn't that sound like a big bang?
It's a big bang from Panju.
The lighter, pure elements drifted upwards to make the sky and heavens, and the heavier, impure elements settled downwards to make the earth.
And what's interesting, just to pause for a second, Stan, Panju sounds very much like a very popular term, Pangea.
That's interesting.
It's interesting how we get a little bit of phonetical idea. And when we go along in the story, we'll find some more things.
Well, let's keep going. In the midst of this new world, Panju worried that heaven and earth might mix again. So he resolved to hold them apart, with the heavens on his head and the earth under his feet. And as the two continued to separate, Panju grew to hold them apart. And for 18,000 years, he continued to grow until the heavens were 30,000 miles above the earth. For much longer, he continued to hold it apart until, fearing the return of the chaos, he finally was able to stabilize things, but then he died.
You know, it's interesting that there is always, in not only in this one, but actually in the ancient Babylonian one, there's always a separation of waters and earth, of heavens above and earth below.
Things.
There's always
that
a separation, and that is a biblical concept that we do have, not only here, but also in even the ancient Babylonian story. But let's go on.
Okay, with his death, the earth took on new characters. Arms and legs grew the four directions, and they became mountains. His blood became the rivers. His sweat became the rain and the dew. His voice became the thunder. How does that happen if he's dead?
I don't know.
His breath became the winds, his hair became the grass, and his veins became the roads and paths, his teeth and bones became the minerals and rocks, and his flesh became the soil of the fields. Up above, his left eye became the sun, the right eye became his moon. Thus, in death, as in life, Panju made the world as it is today.
And so you sort of have a personification or anthropomorphism, you know, describing the world in features of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of have here the Pangaea. That's where I think the time that may be the origin of the idea of Pangaea or whatever.
Oh, that's interesting.
All world sort of ideas.
Okay.
Not that Panju, it could just be not, there's probably no etymological relation, but it sounds like it, but
well,
it isn't.
Well, let's talk about now this goddess who came along named Nu-Wa. And from, she came out much later, and from the edge of the pond, she took some mud and shaped it in the form of a human being. At first, her creation was lifeless, and she set it down. It took life as soon as she touched the soil, however, and soon the human being was dancing and celebrating its new life. Pleased with her new creation, Nu-Wa made more of them, and soon her loneliness disappeared in the crowd of little humans around her. Now, again, the loneliness
again,
thing
the loneliness
and the relationship thing.
Yeah, because she was lonely. And again, you have the idea, though, similar to the scriptures, that the idea that humans were made from earth, from mud. You know, the Bible does speak quite a bit about these ideas where we come out of the earth. We come out of the ground, so to speak, where God bends down and breathes into our nostrils the very breath of life, and man becomes a living soul. So this is... Because you have these stories, Stan, people like to say, okay, the Bible's not much different. It just names a different
God. It's just another story, another culture.
You know, the question is, are these really, which we think, ancient human memories of the once true story, the true story about our origin and existence, and they've twisted some of the details and facts, but still keep parts of the essential story. And the Bible tells us really the real reason why we were made, a torpedo text.
Genesis 1:26-27, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
So from the creation story, we do find our purpose. We don't find a God who's lonely because the Genesis seems to reflect a plural of majesty, Elohim, the Father, Son, and Spirit, working already together.
Yes.
Not because they're lonely, but apparently they delight in relationships. And so they make humanity who will find their delight in relationship with him.
Male and female. He made them, made us a them, just like God exists as an us. Let us make man in our image.
And when the Bible goes on to describe the development of this world, it seems to fit much more what we find truly in this world about males and females, summer, spring, fall, the seasons after the flood, and all the things reflect the truth of the biblical story over the mist of the world. We hope you find this a little bit entertaining. Tune in again to another
Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time to another episode of Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.